If you guys that have been in just a few years would talk to someone that has been here 40, 50 years and ask them what the feasts were like years ago, you'll see we had these feast sites with 10, 15,000 people. I remember St. Pete one year, we were there with 12,000 people. Amazing. But let me ask you something. Where are they now? What happened to these people? They quit the race, didn't they? They decided, they thought it was a sprint. It was not an endurance race for many people. You don't train for a sprint. You can go out and run that and it's over and you're done. We have to do this day after day, year after year. We build up for this endurance race, don't we? Many of us have close friends. We have family that aren't in anymore. And I don't mean United. We all know there are different groups that all of us keep. There are converted people in all these groups. I'm just talking about people who were knew God's truth but decided they didn't want to run the race anymore. They decided that it was time to quit. Well, I want to tell you a story. When I first heard it, I did not believe it. I went on the internet and I found out it was true. It was one of ESPN's greatest stories of all time. And there was a man named Cliff Young. Has anyone heard of Cliff Young? If you're not a runner, you may not have. Each year, Australia hosts an 875-kilometer race from Melbourne to Sydney. It's 544 miles. It's a foot race. People race. These are usually competed only by world-class athletes, 30 years old, younger. Nike sponsors several, Adidas sponsors, and they have this tremendous backing and support. Well, in 1983, they were lining up, they were registering and stretching to begin this race, and up walked a man in boots, overalls, and galoshes. He was 61 years old. Now, everyone looked at him and thought, okay, he's just watching the beginning of the race. But as he went to the registration table, they began to realize, hey, this guy's actually going to run this race. So he took his start, went to the starting line, and other competitors started asking him, well, are you going to run? He said, yes, I'm going to run. And they said, have you ever run a race like this? No, I never have. I said, well, you can't run something like this. This is only for world-class athletes. He said, no, you see, I grew up on a 2,000-acre farm in New Zealand with sheep. And I would have to chase those sheep for 2 and 3 days straight to get those in when storms hit. I can run this race. They said, well, no, you can't. This takes support. They said, do you have any backers? No, my 81-year-old mother's going to help me get through the race. She's going to follow and give me food. Said, well, you can't run this race. And he said, well, I'm going to try. So, of course, the media picked up on it and thought, well, okay, this is a guy that we'll see what happens here. So the race started. He pulled his false teeth out because they rattled when he ran. They bothered him. So naturally, the race started, and the world-class athletes absolutely left him behind. Took off the first day. He's very far behind. Now, these world-class athletes knew something. They knew you should run 16 hours a day and rest 8. The problem was Cliff did not know that. He had no idea you should take rest. So when they stopped the first night, he continued to run. And he did this for the first night. The media started picking up on it. They thought, you know, if this man doesn't stop, he's going to die. So the media really started hammering in, and they were interviewing. You could see those on the internet. You could see YouTube where they are actually interviewing him as he's shuffling along. He was very slow, but he was like the turtle in the hair. Well, by the third day, he began to catch up with the world-class runners as they would rest. He would continue. By the end of the race, he was very close on the last day. But then the last night, when they began to rest, he passed the world-class runners. He continued the next day. When they woke up, they realized there was no way they were going to catch him. He finished the 875-kilometer race, 544 miles, in 5 days, 15 hours and 4 minutes, breaking the record by 9 hours that it had ever been run. He said when running the race, he would even hallucinate because it was so far, that he began to picture himself chasing those sheep. And that's what he saw. We've learned throughout our lives to run the race like Cliff Young, haven't we? We've learned, yes, we do have difficulties. Hills that we climb, they represent part of this race that we're running. The trials that we face, they are those hills. But we've seen people who have come in, not treated it like a endurance race. They just go all at the beginning, and then they burn themselves out, don't they? We're still here. There's a reason for that. We just continue to plod along while others have dropped to the side. Turn to 1 Corinthians 9, if you will. First Corinthians 9 and verses 24 through 27. And Paul says here, "Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may obtain it. And everyone who competes for the prize is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a perishable crown, but we for an imperishable crown. Therefore I run thus, not with uncertainty. Thus I fight, not as one who beats the air, but I discipline my body and bring it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become disqualified." You see, it's training, isn't it? It's every year. It's the mistakes we've made. It's every Bible study, every prayer that we do. It's building on this training for this endurance race we have. There's an old saying, how do we eat an elephant? Well, we don't eat elephants, so how do we eat a cow? We eat it one bite at a time, right? We have to do this. We learn from our mistakes, our spiritual mistakes. We build upon one another. Again, every time we open the Bible, every time we get on our knees, we learn more and more. We build on this base that we have to run this race. We can't take time off, can we? Satan certainly doesn't, does he? So how can we take the time off? We have to continue to run this race. Now, we're going to be walking a lot of times when we're facing trials, aren't we? But we continue taking one step forward. It may be slow at some times. But again, each Sabbath, each year that we face, we're building more and more on this endurance race. This is a race, and it says there's more than one winner in this race. Christ has already won. He's already first place. But anyone who finishes this race will win. There's an Ironman in Hawaii. There's only one world-class winner, but everyone that crosses that line, they have won. They have completed the race. I'd like to conclude with 2 Timothy 4, if you will. 2 Timothy 4, verses 7 and 8. It says, "I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day, and not to me only, but also to all who have loved his appearing." There's more than one winner. Anyone that finishes the race, that's what we get. Could be we don't see the end time. My father died a year and a half ago. He died in faith. I know he's there. You know, he's there in the twinkle of an eye. That he's been sealed. Could be we're not baptized at the end, and or some young people here will go through as humans, you know, into the millennium and possibly be baptized then and become spirit beings. Some of the kids in the children's choir, I think, we don't know when the end time is, do we? But they may face the end time as a human being. But think about it. In the twinkling of an eye that we actually hear these words, he said, "You have finished the race, my good and faithful servant. Welcome to the family."